welcome to minute 95 of season 8 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we fubar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week while we're weeping away with Tom Hanks is Jim O'Kane of so many different podcasts within the Movies by Minute community. Welcome back to the show, Jim.
Thanks for having me, Rob. I like American.
Well, we'll have to find out what you like about Americans, but we shall wait and see. So, minute 95 begins with Miller continuing to sob to himself and ends with Upham giving the prisoner a light. So, we discussed yesterday the integral minute of, watching the acting ability of Tom Hanks, where he's able to cry on cue.
Yes.
And he does it very realistically.
He does. I don't think he's not doing it like it's a soap opera. It looks like he's just reacting, and it's simultaneously depression, sadness, rage, and exhaustion. You can feel the exhaustion in the in watching it. It feels like he's walked every mile from Omaha Beach to get to this part, and he just doesn't have anything left in him. He's just trying to find those last little dregs of energy to keep going. I think some of the crying is for the loss of Wade. Some of it's for being put in a situation where he had to make a decision that would cost men their lives, and now he's stuck in this morally perilous situation where he has to kill a guy who he didn't see kill anybody. I mean, he was on the other side, but he wasn't exactly, actively murdering somebody that they knew of.
Do you think that's his dilemma?
I think
as to whether this prisoner is guilty of something or not.
I don't think it bothers him. I don't think, at this point, I don't think it would bother him to take the guy out and shoot him. The only thing that's stopping him is Upham. And Upham's making the case that, have a little bit of, have more humanity than these guys showed us.
Right. But I don't think he's looking at him and saying, well, is this guy guilty of this particular crime? I mean, this is a guy we know. Miller knows this guy was part of this battle.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was on the other side of that machine gun, so,
That's right. So from that perspective, there's no moral ambiguity there.
Yes.
This is a guy who was part of it. But he's starting to, he'll talk more about this over the next 2 weeks, but he's starting to remember what it's like, spoiler for anyone who doesn't know, what his life was like as a teacher in Adley, Pennsylvania, where you don't have to make a decision as to whether you're going to execute a prisoner or not.
Yeah, he's in like
he's trying to get back to the normalcy.
Yeah, he's in that Joseph Campbell Heart of Darkness. He's at the life at its most evil, at its most primal, and they're just trying to survive now. And everything around them, the land, the terrain, the people, everything is the enemy. And he knows what he's lost in all of this. He's lost the ability to say this is right, this is wrong. He doesn't have that luxury anymore.
Correct. No, because the decisions that he needs to make are based on what is good for me and, my men right now, and what's gonna keep us alive.
Yeah.
And he knows that, and I think he'll say this next week. He knows that he can't take him with him. They don't have the option of taking this prisoner with them. So from their perspective, from his perspective, he's got two options. Either you kill him or you take him with you. He doesn't even think of any other possibility at this point.
Yeah.
But when Upham is bringing up the idea that, be humane here to this soldier who's only here because of the same reason that we're here. We're here because our country called us to do our duty. That's what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. This is
not thinking about everything that comes behind that. You know, is this right or wrong? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, he's not. His mission is immediately in front of him. He doesn't have to take in the big picture. He knows the big job is win the war, go home. But right now he's got this specific job to do is find some needle in a. I think he said a needle in a pile of needles.
No, he find it. No. Find a needle in a stack of needles.
That's right. Needle in a stack of needles. So you know he's that's his only concern, and the one time he took his eye off of that one concern, one of his men died. So you know he's honing in on what he needs to get done and nothing else.
Correct, but again, that's part of the burden of command.
Yeah.
The idea of having to make these decisions. I mean, we talked about this a few weeks ago. You know, he said, "Okay, I'm going to go up the middle. Mellish, you're going. You're going on the right, and who's going left? You know, which showed the beginning of his breakdown. Because as a commander, and we saw this beforehand. You know, he says, "Okay, you go do this." You know, you're giving out all the orders. You're not allowing your soldiers to make the decision. You know, you as the commander say, okay, this is what's being done. But when they did the assault, he said, okay, Mellish, you're going to the right, and then I want a volunteer to go to the left, which already starts to show that he's relinquishing a little bit of his command decision. Because as a commander, he should have said, okay, Mellish, you go left, and Ryben, you go right, or whatever it is. It doesn't really matter. As opposed to you. You know, this isn't a pickup football game, in a backyard or something like that. It's, you know, you have someone who is quote unquote the dictator making the decisions here. This isn't, it's not meant to be a democracy.
No,
it's not okay. Who wants to volunteer?
You're not putting it up for a vote. Yeah,
that's right. But you already see that there's a little bit of a breakdown from him, you know, with that whole thing. I guess partially it had to do with the fact that. That here was an assault that they didn't have to do. But on the other hand, Mellish was also against it. So it's not as if he said, okay, well, you're for it, so why don't you come with me? It was like, okay, you're against it, so you're coming with me, and now I want another volunteer. You know, and it took a few jibes for him to finally get Jackson to agree, you know,
yeah.
to take the other side and stuff like that. So we see that the burden of command, the way that it's taking its toll on him. I mean, 2 days ago you mentioned some of your favorite World War II movies. You mentioned The Longest Day. I mean, there are movies like that which they didn't give us any of the emotion.
Yeah.
You know, you see, or if they did, it was very superficial. Here, this is, you know, Spielberg's taking the time to show the emotional damage that someone like Miller has to take. I mean, he talked a few weeks ago about the fact that he's lost, if I remember correctly, I think he said he's lost 93 men under his command. Now that number is obviously 94.
Yeah.
You know, 94.
Yeah.
see,
hi Alex.
I got it in there for you, Jim. I got it in there for you. Even though today's 95.
Yeah.
But yeah. But you know the toll. I guess he's reached the point where, you know, actually it's very possible that he's been emotional about this the whole time, just always in private. You know, which again here he's gone off and he's hiding behind rocks because he knew that that's what that he's going to have to express his emotions, and as this hardened captain, he's not allowed to do that in front of them.
Yeah, he's gotten to the point where everything is boiled out of him. Everything else, nothing matters except for this prime mission. And now he's just got to keep it together enough so that the troops under his command aren't flustered. I mean, if you see your CO losing it, then you're going to go, well, what am I doing here? There is nobody in control. So he has to
That's correct.
Even if he doesn't have the control inside, he has to maintain the illusion of control and authority. And
that's right.
That.
Which is something that the miniseries The Pacific dealt with. I mean, you mentioned that earlier this week also. You know, when they were on, I think it was in Palolet, there was you know, they had an episode where everyone was basically starving and they were thirsty the whole time or whatever. And one of their hardened commanders, you know, their sergeant major, basically just stripped down naked and was, you saw how much pain he was in. And once you see a commander breaking down, you know, that can lead to a whole domino effect.
Yeah, exactly. So, and
you know,
which
Miller
knows
this. Very
yeah, so he's, you know, that's why he's behind the rocks at the moment. Just
that's right. Well, he's a teacher.
Yeah.
It's interesting because as a teacher, I'm assuming that, you know, there's certain things you don't show to your students, that type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, you're not on the same level as your students. So from that perspective, it might make it, it's completely natural for him to act this way.
Yeah. And,
you know, if a teacher has an emotional outburst, you walk out of the room. You know, you don't do it in front of the kids.
Yeah. And he can't,
or
he
students.
Can't be, like, he can be cordial to them, but he can't be their friend because he has to make decisions that could lead to their deaths. So being, you know, having that emotional distance, even though he can have some empathy, but he can't really let it rule his life. And being able to compartmentalize that self must be something that really, you know, you think about how much strain him and, you know, spiritually, for lack of a better word, it must be eating him up inside, thinking I have to let go of a little bit of my humanity to get the job done. And probably more than a little bit of his humanity.
Right. Correct. Correct. And again, I mean, it goes back to what I was saying before. During the D-Day assault, he just was picking guys to do things, saying, you, and you, do this. You know, it's like he knew who they were, which also showed, and we talked about this at the time, you know, that he intimately knows his men. You know, he might be the commander of hundreds of men, but he knows who each
right.
of them are. You know, he knows that, okay, I'm sending you and you and you, and he knows their names. So it's not just anonymous. It's not
mo. He's got to pick these people, and despite the fact of how he feels about them, they might be, you know, very. He might know all their family stories and things like that, but it doesn't matter because his primary mission is to get the job done, and not to save saving the lives of his men is not the prime mission. So.
Correct. Which again is another connection to Band of
yep.
Brothers. The idea of the you know you had that with Dick Winters, that even when he was no longer in charge of them, he still wanted to be in charge of them because these are guys that he knew very
right.
well, and wanted to do all he can in order to help them and save them and whatever, you know, that type of thing. So. You know, Miller, from that perspective, he's a great commander because he knows how to deal with the tactics and stuff like that. But he also needs to put all of he needs to hide his emotions and put them to the side when making all of these command decisions and stuff like that. So I like the way that they show this. And again, in a almost 3-hour movie, to take this much time for this, you know, one would normally think that that's a waste.
Yeah,
but apparently it's not because it gets the point across really, really well.
Yeah, Spielberg is never wasteful of his screen time. I mean, he might linger a little bit longer than we feel comfortable with, but his storytelling is very economical when you're understanding what's going on the screen and just showing a brief scene of Miller. Or conversation over the whole thing, with letting, as we said before earlier this week, letting the picture speak for themselves and let the audience interact with what they're, you know, let them interpret what's going on rather than telling them what's going on.
Right. I mean, again, I think we get more than a minute of him sitting there crying.
Yeah.
And as you said, if an economical director is generally not going to show a minute of a character like this crying, unless unless there's going to be a big
payoff. It's key. I mean, that's a lot of real estate on film. So, you know, if it's this important to Spielberg, we should put it in our, you know, in our memory banks and say, this is key. Remember this part.
Correct. And it's done very, very well. And he, you know, you can even see that there, it's not just sobbing. You see tears. You see him wipe his eyes. You know, he doesn't have any Kleenex with him, you know, to deal with that. You know, he's gonna have to figure out how to deal with it. And then the shot changes, and we see Upham and this German prisoner sitting there chatting away. Upham even gives him a cigarette, and the guy looks at the cigarette and goes, "Hey, American, I like American." And again, this is also a great way to show us that these two characters, who theoretically have nothing in common. Again, we know that this German prisoner is a cold-blooded killer, but Upham doesn't know it. Upham, you know, takes him for with a grain of salt and says, "This is a guy. This is just a regular guy. You know, I'm not gonna try to, you know," and he befriends him.
We're all friends under our uniforms, and it's he doesn't know what's about to happen, and neither does the audience. So it's you know, it's even more tragic that you think, well, he's being nice to the guy, maybe, you know, we'll all get along later on.
Correct, but I think it would be naive to really believe that, because you know when you're you know again you can look at it from both perspectives. You know, if the Germans had captured an American, it would have been the same type of thing. You know, from that perspective, you're in a war, you're in a battle against an enemy. You're not just going to say, "Oh, I'm going to put down my arms and everything will be fine."
You don't get to you know, ollie
You know,
ollie
because
oxen free home or something.
that's right. So it's just you know, and we can see that in the background, the other men are starting to come back towards where Upham and this prisoner are. Even just watching these two interact for just this 10 seconds that we're given here, you know, if you were to take away their uniforms, they could theoretically just be two friends, you know, out for a smoke. You know, there's no fear, there's no antagonism between them,
It's like
nothing.
they called time out.
That's right. That's right. It's ironic because, you know, once you know what's going to happen in this movie, so it's just a question of looking at Upham, that Upham is just very naive, and this German soldier happens to be very shrewd. That's what it comes down to, because
He can play the psychological aspect. If I befriend the guy, he's not, you know, you're less likely to shoot somebody if you seem like you're a friendly fellow. And Upham, you know,
correct.
he has that technical sergeant, that big T on the side, so he's not infantry. He's a, you know, so he's an
Correct.
NCO that works basically field office stuff. So he's not a warrior.
Right. He's a corporal. He's a technical corporal. He's not a
I'm
sergeant.
sorry, yeah, corporal hit, but he's not involved in frontline fighting.
He still ranks outranks everyone except for Mike and Miller, but yeah.
But you know, he's never he's, until this mission, he's never had to fire a shot in anger. And
No.
you know, this is all, he's kind of a, you know, babe in the woods. And I mean, that'll change over time, but I think that's part of this whole, you know.
The truth is, I don't know how much it'll change over time. Even if, you know, we spoiler alert, I mean, he does end up killing this prisoner, but does he kill him out of anger, or does he kill him at his loss of his own innocence?
Yeah, I mean, I think it got to the point where he realized that this guy needed killing. By the time, you know, he gets to him, he's like, nope, you're, you know, it's, I think he lost that part of himself for being, depending on how you look at it, being either empathic or being a sucker for somebody
Right.
pretending friendship.
Exactly. And so as the two of them are you know sharing a smoke, and the other guys show up, they all start walking over to them, and then you know the German prisoner smiles at Upham, and then the minute ends. But people are going to have to wait until Monday to find out what is going to happen
here. The suspense
here.
Over cigarettes.
Cliffhanger. That's right. Why not? All right, so Jim, did you have anything else you want to say about this minute or about the movie in general?
I do really appreciate you bringing me back to this film. I haven't watched this in years, and I think my attitude toward it may have softened a bit. I'd said at the beginning of this week that I really didn't like the head fake, and the way that it hit me when I first watched the movie. The whole point of the movie was Matt Damon's character, Private Ryan, going through the whole movie, and all he needed was his wife to, answering the question, "Was I a good boy?" And the wife going, "Yeah, you were a good boy." It's like, "Oh, good. I'm glad I'm a good boy." And to me, that hit me as very simplistic, but it goes with the mood of the film, and I've learned to forgive parts of it, so it's better than I remembered it being, and I do like the verisimilitude of a lot of the scenes in this movie. It very much felt like what was going on in World War II and the challenges that the infantry and everybody there faced, and both the soldiers and on the home front. Bringing back the idea of the Fighting Sullivans and what it's like to lose an entire family. Their lives were wrecked. The complete catastrophe of losing all your sons. It's something that you can identify with on the home front there. So, but thanks again for having me on to watch this show and review it in my head one more time. I like it better than before I watched it again.
Okay, I'm glad. Isn't that the point? Isn't that why
we do it? So to find out what we don't know about the movies that we've been watching.
That's right. That's very true. So every Friday we have a segment called Filmmaker Friday, where my guests will give their top five Steven Spielberg directed films. So Jim, once again, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up?
When I was a little kid, I used to watch ABC's Movie of the Week, and I remember how absolutely terrified I was watching one of Spielberg's first movies, Dennis Weaver in the movie Duel, TV movie, and it just scared the heck out of me. It's one of those hide behind the couch things that every I didn't drive at the time, but every driver's fear of being out on a lonely highway and there's some guy in a big 18-wheeler out to get you. Duel really hit me as to what a great filmmaker Steven Spielberg was, even at my tender age. Number four. I would put as Minority Report. I think a Spielberg Tom Cruise team up. I know he did War of the Worlds as well, but Tom Cruise and Minority Report, excellent combination of directing and acting. I did like the way that that Spielberg approached that film. A lot of the throwaway technology in there, especially stuff like going through a shopping mall and having all the shopping mall remember your eyeballs as cookies to show advertising. It's just brilliant, and unfortunately, I think the present has caught up with what used to be the future. So I was very impressed by Minority Report. Number three on the list: Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I remember seeing this after watching Star Wars in the movie theater. Very different take for science fiction. I liked the human story of it, Richard Dreyfuss and Terry Garr dealing with is daddy crazy or is he really seeing aliens? I am a much like Roy Neary in the movie. I am an avid model railroader, so seeing a model railroader getting taken away by aliens in a giant spaceship, I can almost relate. I haven't had the aliens take me away in a spaceship, but I have built more than one model railroad, sometimes in a living room. So,
have you ever built any mashed potato mountains?
That could be next. I'll see. But yeah, I do enjoy it. My favorite line from the movie is police cars bouncing through the Indiana Ohio border, And the toll booth operator leaning out and going, "Hey, that's Ohio. That's a quarter." That's my favorite. I've used that line more than once in many different unrelated events. Let's see. Number two on my list is one of the Indiana Jones movies, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. I think that's the perfect coda to the Indiana Jones trilogy. I don't think of the later movies as being part of the original flavor. Raiders set the tone for how the movies were going to be. It's going to be adventure. It's going to be fun. Temple of Doom, I kind of ignore because I think Lucas and Spielberg were both going through divorces and they were very depressed and they took it out on their actors in Temple of Doom. But I think Last Crusade.
Well, that helped Spielberg.
Yeah, it did help Spielberg. I was on a plane once with Amy Irving just before they got divorced, and after I found out that he was leaving Amy Irving, I was like, why? I met her. She's a sweetheart. Anyway, the Last Crusade has the Arthur legend. It's got it's got tank battles and too many. Yeah, Sala has too many camels, and just fun. And plus, River Phoenix in one of his great later, almost final roles. Did such a great job of being a young Harrison Ford. I really appreciated every moment of that film. So you lost today. Unfortunately, live by all too often. And of course, number one, I have to pick Spielberg's greatest achievement. I think he invented the true modern blockbuster with Jaws. Jaws is almost, as you watch it, it goes from a simple monster horror story to almost metaphysics. Watching the amazing cinematography, fantastic, iconic acting, being able to stick a camera in front of Robert Shaw and have him tell the story of the USS Indianapolis and slowly moving in on him was astonishing filmmaking. That's the reason that we go to the movies, is to be spellbound. And I think Spielberg was at his peak with the movie Jaws. It's a beautiful thing, and I watch it every 4th of July weekend. It's worth your while. So those are my Spielberg mileposts.
Oh, wow. All right. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that, Jim. So would you like for one final time this week to tell people where they can find this guy,
yeah,
Jim?
Yeah, we'll get ready for the end of the year because we've got a big one coming for you on December 1st, 2025. Go look for the Captain America Minute. We've got director Joe Johnson's going to join us, a bunch of people who helped make the movie, a bunch of people who talk about the movie, a bunch of people who have interesting sidelines that intersect with Cap and the Strategic Scientific Reserve. So, and some real surprise guests. I'm not even going to drop any because you got to come in and get surprised. But there's something new every week. We're going to be on three times a week starting December 1st, 2025. Check us out, capminute.com.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. Now, I think I should take this opportunity when Jim is here to also tell people about the idea of Movies by Minute. There's a Movie by Minute website. If anyone out there who listens to this show or any of the other Movies by Minute shows, you all know that we're completely crazy about movies. We like going very deep into discussing everything that goes on in a movie, and maybe if you like listening to it, maybe you actually also would like to start your own podcast. So there is a there's a website, moviesbyminute.com. You can go there, you can see a list of all the movies that people have done Movies by Minute up until now, and hopefully you will find that some of your favorite movies are not there, and that you might personally want to start a podcast to talk about your favorite movie minute by minute in minute detail. There is a Facebook group of many of us from the Movies by Minute community. And, we're all willing to give advice. We're willing to guest on other people's shows, to help you to start off. It's not as difficult as you might think. Many of us, myself personally, before I started this, I thought it was much more difficult than it really is. But when you're doing something that you love, it just so simple. You have anything to add to
No,
that, to
I
all I just
agree.
said,
We're
Jim?
kind of like we're the mirror that you can hold up to the Medusa of a movie that you haven't seen. So if you don't know about a movie, you can listen to a Movies by Minutes podcast and get the feel for a movie, even if you haven't seen it. I mean, I've listened to a lot of Movies by Minutes podcasts, and I haven't seen the movie, but it's kind of inspired me to go watch the movies that I've been listening to. So I really can strongly recommend, like Rob said. You must have a movie that you love that you haven't heard anybody talk about yet. Or maybe you have heard somebody talk about it and you think you could do it better. Join us. We're always ready to help. There's a huge community out here. We all love movies and we love chatting about them. So check us out, moviesbyminutes.com. If you go to the top of the page, there's a link to the Facebook group. Join us. We'll be happy to talk with you and help you get through that first episode that'll get you onto the next and the one after that. So please join us out there.
Yeah. All right. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest. So everyone have a great weekend. But until then, earn this.
Earn this.
My solitude.